Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Winsult us.
Good morning, good Phoebe. Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. I don't think we've heard the last of that Gary Lineker BBC story at all, because people will want to know the details. How did they, you know, chat about what went on? What did Gary Lineker agree to do in the future? And even by his tweets today, I'm just looking at it. At the end of it, he goes, however difficult the last few days have been, it simply doesn't compare to having to flee your home from prosecution or war to seek refuge in a land far away. So he's sort of having the last word on it. And I don't know if the people in the BBC will be happy about that. But maybe it will. Maybe it'll just evaporate and it'll be yesterday's news and nobody will talk about it again. But I suspect that we'll hear more about that in the coming weeks and months. How was your weekend? Yeah, weather wasn't great. Mixed bag. Mixed bag today as well. It's looking grim out there at the moment in Dublin. Grey and wet. Bleh, that sort of thing. But the stars were out last night on the champagne carpet. Bring back the old red carpet. Champagne carpet me behind. Go, where are you going with your champagne carpet? And the people who know reckon that it didn't do anything for anybody's complexion. That it drained the colour out of their faces. Red's a great colour because, you know, here's me sounding like I know what I'm talking about, but colours like yellow pop off a red carpet. Kerry Condon was wearing yellow, and that would have been looked brilliant against, it looked brilliant anyway, but it would look brilliant against red. And Deirdre Meskell, we spoke to her on Friday, Paul Meskell's mum, she was there as his plus one. And when you're on the red carpet, you're going to be interviewed. And she was interviewed by somebody from Variety on the champagne carpet.
Mommy,
yeah.
You're on the Oscars with Sunny.
Yeah, pretty much.
What is going through your mind right now?
This is just the most incredible, incredible moment. And it's real. It's actually not fantasy. It's actually real.
When he told you he wanted to be an actor, what was your first reaction?
Dad, Oscars. Because I trusted him. He just knew what he wanted to do and just let's go with it.
Did you know he'd be here at the Oscars?
I did my imaginating, and that's what happened.
Yeah, she did her imaginating. She was talking to us on Friday, talking about her Gucci dress, and she was saying when she went to get fitted for it, it was her Cinderella bibbidi bobbidi boot moment. She was suited and booted, and I hope she had a brilliant time. She's home, just so you know. She's been Instagramming. Deirdre Meskell is home. And of course, the other big talk, well, loads of big talk from an Irish point of view, and it's positive. Some of it was positive. Jimmy Kimmel interviewed, didn't interview, but he introduced Jenny the Donkey to the people in the audience.
This is Jenny. She is one of the stars of Banshees of Inisherin. More Jenny. Not only is Jenny an actor, she's a certified emotional support donkey. Or at least that's what we told the airline to get her on the plane from Ireland.
Hey, but was it really Jenny? Rita Maloney, animal coordinator and trainer with Firrcroft Animal Actors, is on the line. Hello, Rita.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. Did you stay up to watch the Oscars last night?
Do you want the truth?
Yes.
No.
Good.
No, I did not. I did not. No. I think I was partying with my sisters, actually, which started off as a good idea, but no, we didn't even get to turn the TV on.
Right, so you woke up...
Disappointing result, mind you.
Yes, yeah, very disappointing for Banshees of Inisherin. 9 nominations and no Oscars.
I know.
So when you woke up this morning and Jenny was all over the place, what did you think?
Oh, Lord, I thought we would have been finished with Jenny, but no, not to be. Well, oh, by the way, congratulations on your donkey adoption.
Oh, yes.
Nice move.
Yeah,
well done.
Jaxie is the name of our donkey. Yeah.
Oh, I know, I heard.
Yeah. No, okay.
Great interview with the donkey sanctuary.
Yes.
Yeah, well done.
Now, was that Jenny that we saw last night with Jimmy Kimmel on the stage at the Oscars?
If you were to put money on Paddy Power, was it Jenny, do you think?
No.
Good man.
Yes.
Right answer. Absolutely, 100%, definitely no, not.
Stand in. Looked like I wouldn't have been able to tell the difference, yeah.
No, it was a miniature.
Yes.
It was a miniature. But no, because the the logistics of getting the real star on the show yesterday just would have been a nightmare. Like, you're talking Department of Agriculture, an amount of paper, cargo transport. No, definitely not.
And you told us the last time we were speaking that Jenny has been retired to a place where only a very few people, less than a handful of people, know where Jenny is.
For sure.
Yes.
And that is the truth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And long may it last.
Myself and one of the Irish, forever. Forever. Yes. No, she is retired. I saw her about maybe 3 weeks ago with one of the Irish producers, and she looks absolutely fantastic, doing really well. Very pleased with how she is, and I will continue on behalf of the production company to keep an eye on her.
Great.
Every now and again.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So, Jenny is a Mediterranean miniature donkey, black, and as was the donkey on stage last night.
Absolutely.
I suppose some people are going, that's no place for a donkey.
on the stage?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Well, look, it's American, isn't it?
Would she have been, she'd been prepared for that and trained and all that sort of thing?
My feeling is, Joe, that... Oh, sorry.
Ray. No, that's just fine. It's fine. Yeah, I can butcher. Yeah. He's out in the corridor now. I can get him free. Joe! Talk to Joe.
He's left the building. Get over yourself. My feeling is that she would have been from either maybe an agency that have various animals, or she would have been definitely sourced specifically from somebody that was involved with showing, handling, or breeding of miniature donkeys.
Yeah.
But I mean, for her, her reaction was brilliant because she's very socialised creature. Just to take it all in her stride.
And I even thought, looking at the clip, that she did make eye contact with Colin Farrell, who was in the front row.
Of course she did. Wasn't it in the script?
It was in the script. As rehearsed.
Yeah. I'd say the person that got the biggest right was probably poor Colin, right? Definitely not Jenny.
Yeah. Listen, Rita, great talking to you. Mind yourself.
And you, Ray. Now, okay, thank you very much.
Is there, do you want, no. See you, Rita. Bye. So the other big thing that happened was James Martin, the star of An Irish Goodbye, and they won Oscar for Best Live Action Short. If you haven't seen it, it was shown over the weekend and it's available to watch on the RTE player and comes highly recommended from here. Tom Berkeley, one of the co-writer-directors, was up receiving his Oscar. Chuffed. And then he said,
"This award is actually the second most important thing about today because it's this man's birthday. He's out here in Hollywood wearing a leopard print suit jacket. We'd love to use the rest of our time up here to sing for James.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear James. Happy birthday to you."
Hey, James Martin, on his 31st birthday, part of a project that received an Oscar. Isn't that amazing? It's reassuring to listen to all those people, all the stars of the world, the best actors, moneyed, all that sort of thing. And they sound like any group of people, half them out of tune and half them in tune singing happy birthday. James's dad, Ivan, was on Morning Ireland this morning. The first thing he remarked upon was the leopard print jacket that his son wore to the Oscars.
"Well, I thought, what a jacket for the start.
What a jacket. He looked great."
And it was wonderful for him to have that memory now of the whole theatre singing happy birthday, James Martin. That was wonderful for him. And of course, the not small matter of picking up the Oscar for An Irish Goodbye. Fantastic. We were so proud of him.
It's hard to imagine how proud Ivan must have been. And James' mother was over there with him in LA for the Oscars. The Oscar for Best Song went to this. Hey! And if you do one thing today, we would highly recommend that you watch back the performance of that on the Oscars last night. It is just, it's life affirming, it's fun, it'll put a smile on your face, it'll energize you. It's just brilliant. Hey! That's from the film RRR. And it's the first Indian song to be nominated, and of course then obviously the first one to win. It was up against stiff competition. Lady Gaga was in there, Rihanna, well done to them. But the performance last night, and to consider that it's in front of a live audience, just amazing, brilliant. While we're on music, I love this, particularly for a Monday, these surveys are good. Dog's best friend is rock and roll, according to Rebecca Downs' music study. Hey!
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a
The findings from a national survey of 2,000 adults commissioned by Rebecca Downs Music found that 50% of pet owners say their beloved four-legged friends get excited by music. Some dance around, some jump up and down, or just get overexcited, just like humans. Oh, really?
Who let the dogs out?
Was it cats a few weeks ago? Music for mice, music for hamsters, music for guinea pigs. Like, you know, there could be a range there. You could make money on that. 51551 ray@rte.ie. We will tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, this. Good afternoon. We started this last week. We'll keep it going and see how it goes. The only way people give you suggestions to watch things at the beginning of the weekend, we thought, well, we do all our watching at the weekend. It's fresh. Fresh in our memory, so why not make suggestions after you've watched the things? That would make more sense to us. So every Monday, when I say every, it may not happen next week, but it happened last week and it's happening this week, we will do little suggestions and recommendations from the team. Aaron Eve, who's producing today, watched the Oscars, so she's pretty tired and disappointed. She's also watching the third and final series of Star Trek Picard, which is slow-moving but wonderfully nostalgic for Trekkies, Aaron Eve says. Neil watched The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and that stars Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman, and recent Oscar nominee Barry Keoghan. It's from 2017. Great chance to see Barry Keoghan up close. Emily watched Finding Michael on Disney Plus, and that follows Spencer Matthews, married to Vogue Williams, as he retraces his brother's last steps on Mount Everest. A site to Spencer that many people may not know about. Some incredible drone footage of the mountain too. It's crazy to see how far technology has come in the last 20 years. Says our Emily Max, who's with us today, watched the finale of The Last of Us, which dropped, landed, whatever you're having yourself last night. Absolutely brilliant and heartbreaking from beginning to end, with a great tease for an inevitable season 2. Best series I've seen in years, says Max. Grace and her dog Dudley were glued to Crufts all weekend. Bluff! They reckon they're ready to register for Best in Holy Show next year. And an Irish Wolfhound won in one of the categories, owned by Chris Amu, who's a member of the band The Real Thing. You to me or everything. We watched The Odd Life of Timothy Green, which is on Disney. Just suddenly appeared. It's 11 or 12 years old. It's an odd story. I enjoyed it, and I tell you what it is for parents who are looking to broach those sensitive issues like bullying and being different and fitting in. There's loads of themes like that explored in a very light way. So if you have a 10, 11, 12 year old in the house and you want to broach some of those subjects, can we suggest The Odd Life of Timothy Green on Disney? There you go. That's half works now. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and play our Who Done It quiz. I know it should be Who Did It. Tell that to all the great detective writers from the 50s and 60s. Okay, two people to come on and answer three Who Done It questions on music, sport, TV, books, politics, film, comedians, anything that involves human endeavour. Like all Who Done It, there will be clues. Without a clue, you get two for a correct answer. And with a clue, you get one because it is easier. And there is a prize. And it's a luxurious break for two to Foda Island Resort in Cork. Nestled at the heart of a peaceful island surrounded by gorgeous scenery and just 8 miles from the bustling city of Cork, pack your bags and escape to your own private island with Foda Island Resort. We've a two-night stay for two adults with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening in the Amber Lounge to be won. Loads of things to do down there. There's a swimming pool, world-class spa, exclusive Cove restaurant. There's a golf course. And then in the surrounding areas, you have Photo Wildlife Park, Photo House and Gardens. And then in the city, you have the English Market out close by Photo. You have Ballymaloe's wonderful gardens and shops. And there's loads more to do. There's Ballycotton nearby, Middleton nearby, photoisland.ie. photoisland.ie. So two people after 4 o'clock. Here is your qualifying question. What award did the short film An Irish Goodbye win last night? Was it an Oscar or an Emmy? So which award did An Irish Goodbye win last night? An Oscar or an Emmy? 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, we're in the middle of Seacht na Gaeilge, which we established lasts for 17 days. And the Irish language has had quite the resurgence recently due to The Quiet Girl and the Oscars and people like Paul Mescal speaking it on the red carpet on Darragh. What's the red carpet?
Carpe Darragh.
Carpe Darragh, right, yes. But the language itself is constantly evolving with a little help from a great team of people. One of these people joins me now. He's the chief terminologist at An Coiste Tír Miocta, and that's the terminology committee. Dunica O'Cronin, you're very welcome.
Gormagat.
You'd think that I'd never spoken Irish, Dunica, the way I tripped over all of that. But my first job was on radio doing an Irish programme.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was telling them upstairs and I invented a word, and this is important because this is what you do.
Yeah.
So I was playing music and I was playing the title track from an album. Do you remember that when you got an album?
Yeah.
The title track was, so I can't remember exactly what the song was, but it came out and I said, Tasulagum Gubinshiv Tatnav Osan Tidlauron Shin.
There you go.
So,
there you go.
But that's probably not the right way to say it, is
we
it?
We should have you on the committee right at that point.
But that's not the correct term, is it?
I mean, we would use maybe Rian for a track, but Tidlery and Tidal Our Own, title song. Why
yes.
not? Nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it, yes.
Yeah, we frequently combine two words together like that to make a new word.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
Now, most people listening would be probably ignorant of the fact that you exist.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it, somebody has to decide what words enter the Irish language. And you are the people.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, some words come in organically and you know, we've no control over that. Some words just come in because people borrow them in from English and start using them. There's nothing we can do about that, and we don't try to stop that. But there is a demand for a lot of terms coming in that, you know, people mightn't use at the moment, but they will want to use them in the future. And that's where we come in.
Give us an example of that? Just.
Well, examples would be, for example, pharmaceuticals. There's new pharmaceuticals being made every day. There's new chemicals being made every day, and they have to be translated into Irish. They have to be available, for example, for maybe documentation in the EU, maybe a leaflet that goes with a pill that you're being prescribed by your doctor and things like that, and we have to make those up. So, you know, we have to take the English, we have to analyse the English, and then we have to translate
them into
Irish.
So did you get busier then when Irish was recognised as an official language
Absolutely.
In the EU? How long ago was that now?
Absolutely. Well, the official recognition came about 15-20 years ago, and then there was a derogation in using Irish as an official language within the EU, but that derogation has gone within the last few years. So, for example, now, you know, a lot of the EU documentation will have to be translated, made available in Irish. And companies, for example, pharmaceutical companies, electronics companies and so on, if they're talking about coming into the market, for example, their safety leaflets will have to be translated into Irish. Because, you know, it's a recognition of the fact that there is always a possibility that there's a doctor down in say, Connemara, who's dealing in Irish with a patient in Irish, who is going to get a prescription written in Irish, is going to go to a pharmacist in Irish, and they are going to expect that, you know, the medication they get, they're going to be able to read the leaflet, if anybody reads these leaflets.
So side effects, for example.
Absolutely, things like that. And they want them to be written in Irish so that they understand when they're looking at this.
And they're legally
medication.
Obliged to do that.
They are, yes. Yeah. So that will be the situation as the years go by, that more and more medications will be coming in. It's not just things like that. It's things like, for example, new chemicals that are invented. The EU has to know, you know, for example, you know, do we tax them? Do we add VAT to them? What are they used for? how much can be used, how much can they be prohibited or controlled. And all of the legislation relating to that has to be available in Irish as well. So the EU will need terminology for those terms. Yeah. Well, they're extremely complicated.
Yeah, so
we don't assume the normal person is going to use those.
So when I was doing the promo for today's show to get people interested, I mentioned the fidget spinner.
Yes.
And the Gaeilge for that is...
Well, the Gaeilge for that is Rohan Mhéara.
Right. And did you come up with that or
no,
somebody else?
No, well, I'll tell you, we did come up with it, but eventually.
Okay.
And this is an example of how the process works. So a query comes in from anybody. It could be from a translator. It could be from a member of the public. It could be from a government department. And fidget spinners, you may recall, a couple of years ago were all the rage. All the kids had them and everything like that. And of course, teachers, for example, would need to know what a fidget spinner was in Irish.
Put that away. Put your
fidget
spinner away.
Exactly. So our first guess at that was a thing called Cashel Gyodom. Now, a Cashel is a spinning top, and that's a long-established word in Irish. And Gyodom is a person who fidgets. It's a fidgeting person.
Right.
Right? So Cashel Gyodom was our initial suggestion for a fidget spinner. But then we put our suggestions to our committee, or a voluntary group. There's about 24 on the group, and they meet once a month, and they go through our recommendations. And they didn't like it. They thought it didn't sound natural. They thought most people wouldn't understand Cashel, certainly wouldn't understand Gyodom.
And the fact that Gyodom is a person as opposed to an object.
Yeah. Well, a fidget spinner would be somebody who's fidgeting, you know, and so on. And that's what you would be doing.
Okay.
You'd be fidgeting with a fidget spinner. And one of our members eventually came up with this idea of Rohan, which is an old word. It's used a lot in old sailing terminology, and it means a small little wheel, like a capstan. And people who know even a fair amount of Irish would know roh, as in rohar. It means a wheel. So Rohan was the first thing, was a wheel. And then Mhéara, which is just the genitive of Mhéar, which means finger.
Yes.
So Rohan Mhéara literally translates as a little wheel of the finger.
Uh-huh.
And if you were to throw a load of toys in front of kids and ask them,
which is the Rohan Mhéara,
you know quite well, they'd pick out the fidget spinner. So we don't have to do a literal translation for them.
So in Ancushta Teirmeochta, there's just two E. Is there two?
We're effectively the secretariat of the Ancushta Teirmeochta, and we prepare the work for a voluntary committee, which then has about 24. It's allowed to have a maximum of 30 people. And these people would be experts from all fields. They would be journalists, scientists, doctors, linguists, mathematicians. And they're able then to give their opinion on our suggestions.
So were you miffed that they didn't accept
your suggestion for
a fidget spinner? No.
not at all. I'd say probably 90 to 95% of our recommendations are accepted on a monthly basis.
Right.
But the 5 to 10% often proves to be the most interesting, you know, because it's what gets people going, it's what gets people talking. And the amount of information you get from people when that conversation is going on
is fascinating. Just on a sort of a bigger view of the world, like language is about communicating, isn't
it? Yes.
Yeah. And that's important.
Absolutely.
So as long as you can understand what I'm saying,
absolutely,
that's the important thing.
Yeah.
So if I pepper the odd English word through my Irish,
No harm at all. I don't see any problem with that.
Can I ask you this? Because this is the thing, and it actually came up the other day with Paul Mescal's mum about the Irish language, that she said, and I think this is common for a lot of people, they understand what's been said, but are afraid to speak it because they're afraid of embarrassing themselves. Afraid of getting it wrong.
Yeah, and they shouldn't be. I mean, for example, a lot of people are talking about Paul, answering the interview.
Yeah.
I mean, now, for example, I mean, Paul used the word film all the time, and I guess Paul, looking back, will say, I know the word "scone" on.
Yes.
He knows it off by heart.
Yes.
But what was the problem there?
No problem.
I mean, you know, he certainly had the syntax. He had the way to construct a sentence. You know? So, you know, every Irish speaker, I'd say, will, you know, now and again throw an English word because they want to communicate and they want to communicate quickly, and sometimes the word just doesn't come to you. In much the same way as English speakers will say whatchamacallit or thingamajig or your man or things like that because the word has escaped them at the moment.
I was passing by two Irish speakers because we were close to Radio na Gaeltachta as I was coming down today, and one of the people was saying, you know.
Yeah.
So they were kind of scared, but they were saying, you know.
Oh, yeah.
What about words that over the years, is it Luchton and car? Mm. Is that controversial? I'm just, for some reason, no, it's not.
I think there was, I'm not aware of the full history of the word Luchton, for example. I mean, car was there since, car originally comes from the Latin carus, you know, for a cart. So it was there for a cart. And it was only natural, I suppose, that if you're talking about a wheeled vehicle, that eventually it would come to mean car and everything like that. And it's the simple and it's closest to English. So it's not necessarily a berluchus or anything like that.
Yeah.
Glouston might have been an attempt to say, let's completely Gaelicise this, you know. So I have no problem with using Glouston or car. I don't have any problem with
that. So the berluchus is...
You know, the berluchus is sort of Englishisms, is that people are afraid of Englishisms coming into the language, right. You know. And, you know, personally, I mean, I'm not speaking on behalf of on this, but personally, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I mean, it's everywhere. It's prevalent in some of the Gaeltachtaí, you know, where you take an English word and you add a fada il to make a verb out of it,
right.
You know. So, you know, everybody jokes about Connemara Irish, for example, saying hirol, you know, to hire, you know.
Or hirol, yes.
You know, cyclol for cycling and so on, you know.
Yes.
What's the damage?
So, but berluchus is a derogatory term, is it?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't use it myself, okay. But it is
a derogatory term.
And there is a fear there, all right.
And you mentioned car, the origins of the word car being from Latin.
Yes.
Does the etymology of an English word affect how it's going to be translated into Irish?
Very much, particularly if we're dealing, for example, with words that might come from Greek and Latin. We will go back to that, and we'll go back to see how they were treated in precedence. In other words, that came in, you know. So, a lot, for example, of the new technological terminology, a lot of that goes back to Greek and Latin, you know. Mm. So, I mean, all of the prefixes like kille, giga, mega, all of those, back to Latin and German. And so once
we've
probably translated those or transliterated those as opposed to translated them.
What does transliterate mean?
Would take the letters, would take the spelling and then put it into an Irish form. So for example, mega, M-E-G-A in English for megabyte and so on like that. You can't have M-E-G-A in Irish because, you know, you probably remember the old quail, the quail.
Oh, yes. So
we would change that to mega, M-E-I-G-E-A. But then we would have things following that, you know.
Right.
That would mean a bite, a bit, or a kilometre or whatever like that. You know?
What is it called? Trans?
We would transliterate or, you know,
Somebody with my name is Raymond.
Yeah.
When at school I was called Raymond.
Yeah. That was a transcribing or transliteration of that.
Okay,
yes, absolutely.
So Ori for A-M-O-N-N.
O-N-N for Raymond. Yeah. And I mean, I suppose the idea there is that there's no point in trying to find an Irish version of a name like Raymond. It's probably not there.
Yes,
it probably didn't exist. And
it actually means the wise protector.
Well done, you.
What's the translation of that?
And I don't think anybody was going to go and find the words for wise and protector and call you that.
No. Well, it was a baby. How could they know?
Exactly.
They couldn't have known back then, Donegan, how things would turn out.
Yes, indeed.
I see that you and your committee you're sort of reactive at the moment.
As opposed to
proactive. I read that article, which is a brilliant article by your colleague.
By
Jenny.
I've
underlined this. She says, for the most part, we respond to terminological needs as they arise through queries rather than being able to identify subject areas where terminology is underdeveloped and address them in a more methodical and comprehensive fashion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, I suppose things are changing over the years and that it depends on the resources we have available to us and depends on the demands, you know, for immediate responses and so on like that. So when we have the time, we have a constant flow of work that we're working on in the background, you know, for example, to take an area that is underrepresented and to try and cover that. But in general, most of our work will be responding to requests from the public
bodies. Would there be requests for a lot of the social media terms?
Yes, there would. So, I mean,
give us a few. Well,
okay. I mean, things that, for example, would be not necessarily a social media term, but one that was mentioned earlier on this morning we were talking was, for example, mullet.
Oh, mullet, you know? Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, we were surprised that we didn't have it. The mullet is a hairstyle.
Yes.
But I mean, this is something that's going, that's all the rage at the moment, you know. It's back in fashion, yeah. You know, God help us.
Paul Mescal has a mullet.
Yes.
It's probably for work.
I don't know. So, I mean, we had to look at that and say, you know, funnily enough, it wasn't in the ordinary dictionaries. I mean, the mullet as in the fish was in the ordinary dictionaries. And varying types of mullets of types of fish.
What's the Irish for a mullet fish?
It's a millet or lonach, L-A-N-N-A-C-H. Okay. Yeah. But we actually said just mullet because we asked the people, like, you know, on our committee who would be speaking in the Gaeltacht, you know, what would you call it?
Yeah, mullet.
Mullet,
okay,
M-U-L-L-I-T.
No, right,
so
okay.
Nothing too major there, yeah. You know. But then there would be things, and I can't think of them over the top of my head, but would be things like, you know, like... blanking or you know, liking, for example, you know,
likes, and so on.
I think it's just tanniv or something like that, which is to like. Oh. It's quite difficult with Irish with some of them because in some cases we need two or three words to indicate as that would be representing.
Right.
So, for example, to like something, you know, is tanyin something lum.
Right.
In Irish, and that can be quite difficult if you just want to make it short and button friendly.
So how would you
know,
make it?
Well, you can just put tanniv or tannian, you know, which sort of means like or likes.
We were looking at that guy. He's a teacher down in Limerick, I think. Yes, and we described him as the blind boy of the Irish language. But he puts up funny videos on social media, and he points out some of the idiosyncrasies of the Irish language, like cuss.
Yeah.
Is in now I'm not, I don't know if he's right, I haven't fact checked this, but he says cuss is foot,
yes,
and cuss is leg,
it is,
yeah, right,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And I mean, these things cause problems when you try to be too accurate or too specific,
yes,
but sometimes
you
just got to say, look, we can't make an exact translation, we'll get as close as we can, you know. Other times, as
why is that? Have you any idea?
It depends on the mentality of the language and of the people, it depends on how specific they need to be in describing. You know, this old thing about the Eskimos having 40 words
for snow.
Like,
and Irish is supposed to be loads of words
for rain.
Rain, yeah.
You know, and I mean, why do you do that? It's because you need them to describe different situations,
types. Yes,
you know?
Yes, yes.
And then what happens then is that, you know, a lot of countries, for example, don't have a word in their language for their own language.
Right.
And one of the reasons for that is that they don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for centuries, they've only ever spoken that language with other people who speak that language.
Yes.
So why would, you know, I mean, for example, if we were brought up in a country where only Irish was spoken and the only people we ever met spoke Irish, why would we need to ask somebody, do you speak Irish?
Yes.
You know, we would just call it language or we would call it something like that. And so that's where things come in. Different people have different perspectives. So if you need five different words for different parts of the leg. Now, which you do in medicine.
Yes.
And we would have to have those in
medicine.
So
what is leg?
I mean, you'd have words for the bones, you know, for the different areas.
Yeah,
so you'd have the fibia, the tibia, the ulna, and all of these, you know. And you'd have words for things like the muscles, and you'd have terms for,
but there's
like...
But there's no Irish word for leg as such.
Cluss is the word.
No,
it's
know,
the same
know,
as foot.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, a lot of people will use gaeog, for example, which means it's like a branch or a limb.
Right.
You know.
Oh, limb.
But,
yes,
you know,
makes sense.
They
yes,
will
yes.
use that. But it depends on how much you want to use it. You can be as specific as you like.
Okay. Let's see. Are there newer words all the time for Gaeilge, Constatatu,
Cahuilto?
Yeah. They're just different dialects.
They're just different dialects and they've been around for many, many years.
Yes,
Now, you see, even for example, in Donegal, for example, Donegal Irish speakers will say, how's Ray? You know, they won't necessarily say Jimmerthatu Ray, say how's Ray, you know, no problem, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
And then they'll go off into Irish.
So you've been hanging around language for a long time.
I have.
and
that sounds dirty.
But
loitering with intent.
loitering with intent around the Irish language for some time. How do you plead? No,
guilty. Guilty.
So you've seen Falstones before about you know, and I've seen them as well.
Yeah,
because I've been in the media, and you see Irish is, you know, it's a sexy language. Everybody's talking about everyone's talking it, resurgence, all that. And there have been a number of those in the last 30 years for me. We're currently in the middle of one again. What do you think?
Well, I think behind the sort of the dawns, the false dawns or the hype that we see, you see a steady growth in, for example, in the Gaelscoileanna. And then you see from that the demand for the Meánscoileanna, you know, the Gaelchaláiste, the second level and so on. And that's the most encouraging thing. So even though, you know, there will be peaks now and again, there will be spikes now and again because, you know, I don't know, the Queen of England speaks Irish or something like that, or Paul Mescal on the
or on Colin Kuhn or whatever.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And you see there where the likes of on Colin Kuhn might make a huge difference in a specific area of, say, of filmmaking and the film industry in Ireland. But all the time there's the growth in the Gaelscoileanna.
So
and
it
the
makes sense. So the trajectory is slowly moving up.
Yeah, which is very, very encouraging. Yes. And it's not just relating to the Gaeltacht areas. I mean, you look at where the growth is, for example, in the Gaelscoileanna and in the Gaelchaláiste, it's in the non-Gaeltacht areas. That's really encouraging to me because what you get from that is you get kids who have no problem speaking Irish and English and taking up other languages as well. They don't feel held back in any way by Irish and they enjoy it. And then you have the parents who are looking at the enjoyment their kids are getting. And in a lot of cases, the parents are getting really involved in the running and the workings of the
schools. School,
and that's fantastic altogether.
What's your favourite Irish word?
It's very, it's like asking what's your favourite child or something like that. But OK, I'll give you an example. I love the word mehel. Right. And the reason for that is that mehel originally was quite a limited word that would have meant, for example, in the countryside, if one person needed to save the turf, you know, that the neighbours would help out, or, you know, cutting hay, the neighbours would help out. And pretty much, I think if you look in the dictionary, it probably just says working group or something like that, or group of labourers. But it's the way it has expanded. And this is an example of a living language, is that the meaning of specific words can expand. And it basically means people cooperating to do something for the benefit of maybe one individual or a group of individuals. And so, to me, it's far more, you know, it has got much more character and meaning in it than, say, group or working group. Yeah. If you think of a mehel, you think of maybe a group of people.
A community
coming together to help out. Now, it could be to help out a poor family. It could be to help out refugees or something like that. I love that word.
For you, does it imply a project? A specific piece of work.
There's a certain time limit to it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're only doing it for a week.
No, for two weeks.
It does definitely imply benefit to others, benefit to the community, benefit to other people who maybe are similar to yourself or maybe are slightly or more
worse off than you are.
Absolutely. As well. And I love it for that.
A new word to promote the language, it must be one of the most used words in English, selfie.
Yeah, feinín, F-E-I-N-I-N. Yeah,
feinín,
and you can see there what it is, because selfie is just self with a little bit added on, a little diminutive added on, and fein is well known in Irish as the word self, or you know,
may feiner,
exactly. Yeah, feiner, so feinín is basically self with a little diminutive added on, so feinín, for selfie.
Right.
Yeah, and that was one that came up, I think.
What about the phrase, we've got this?
Now,
how would you say that?
I'd say we'd probably just say Tashiagin. You know, we have this. You know, Tashiagin. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that came up, or something similar came up with the, you know, Yes We Can, it's Faderlin.
Yes, it's
Faderlin. Remember the time of Obama?
Yes, I do. And he delivered it. On Cuisht Tear Miachta. And the chief terminologist is Dunica O'Cronin, Gurmagat.
Gurmila Magat, right.
Yeah. Pled Keacht is my favourite. Thanks for asking.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, pricewatch at rte.ie if you want Conor Pope to grapple with any of your consumer issues. We have one here today. But before that, Conor is writing today 40 tips on saving money when you're travelling abroad. On your holidays, specifically,
that's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of, I think, like, I know that the real peak season for holiday booking is January, because that's when a lot of families make the decisions as to where they might travel. But also January, February, March, they're busy times for people, and people are kind of, especially when you look at the weather outside in Dublin today, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country, but it's miserable here, and your thoughts do turn to where I'd like to be. So I thought I'd do up a long list, because people love a good list, Ray.
It's a brilliant list, and you may not use all 40, but there's definitely something in there for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, that's what I hope.
So the one I spotted was hiring the car. Don't hire it for the full 2 weeks or 1 week. Get established in the place. Then don't hire it where? In the airport, because you're going to
exactly.
save money. Yes.
Well, listen, we're all preconditioned to go on holidays in a certain way. So yes. One of the things that we tend to do is we book our holiday and then we book the car hire for when we arrive. Now, you don't necessarily need to do that, because a lot of Europe and a lot of places that you might be going in Europe are really well served by public transport or indeed a taxi. So instead of maybe booking the car for when you arrive in the airport and then having it for 2 weeks, and maybe for a week of the 2 week holiday, it sits outside your caravan or it sits outside your hotel and it's never used, get to your holiday location, work out what it is that you want to do, and then if you do need a car, and a lot of the times people actually won't need a car, but if you do need a car, you can book it then from, let's say, the Wednesday to the Wednesday in the middle of the 2 weeks that you're away. So apart from anything, you're saving half, you're cutting the cost of the car hire by half. And we've seen in the last couple of years the car hire has gone through the roof across Europe as a result of what happened in the post-pandemic period. So not only are you reducing the time that you're renting the car, but you're also renting it away from an airport. Because in every single country in the world, there is a premium attached to renting a car in an airport. And, you know, the world has become so easy to navigate as a result of your mobile phone. Like, in times past, if you were in the Costa Brava or the Costa del Sol or Greece or wherever, trying to work out how to hire a car while you're on a campsite or while you're in a hotel would have been tricky. But nowadays, everything is done for us by our smartphones. So it's actually really simple to do. And as you say, instead of spending €1,200 on your car hire, you might end up spending €600.
Good saving.
Yeah.
There's an app for everything, including packing.
Yeah, there is an app for packing. Now, like, packing is one of the areas where people can make a lot of savings. I mean, like, we've talked about this on the show in the past, whereby you roll your packaging or wherever it might be.
Yeah, yeah.
But I came across an app for packing, and
no.
Do you know what? I what you do is you choose your destination, you say how long you're going, and you say when you're going. And the app then instantly returns the list of things that you might need. So I said, okay, well, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say I'm going to Galway. I'm going to Galway in the middle of June. So what am I going to need? And it gave me a long list of stuff.
Wetsuit.
Well, it didn't actually include a wetsuit, funnily enough, but it had a casual watch. Like, I'm not going to bring a casual watch. Earplugs. Like, I know Galway and Quay Street can be loud, but you're not going to need... I'm from Galway, so yes, which is why I picked it. An eye mask, condoms, a camera. Like, who carries a camera on their holidays nowadays? Yeah. Everything is done on your phone, as I say. But the app is called Packpoint. And you know what? If you were going off to Vietnam or Thailand or wherever it might be more useful.
It sounds like a bit of crack anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when it comes to packing, as I say, there's all sorts of things like, you know, wear your bulkiest clothes while travelling. Contact lens cases are excellent, liquid and cream holders, because, you know, they're really easy to seal and they pack in a surprising amount of makeup and stuff like that. The other thing that an idea is, you know, the pillows that you have.
You're not going to tell me the ones you can put your clothes into.
Yeah. Do you know what? Why not? Because if you could pack 4 or 5 days worth of your clothes into the little
travel
pillow.
What do you do on the way back?
What do you mean, what do you do on the way back?
Well, you're going to have dirty undies.
I'm not suggesting you use it as the travel pillow. You're just using it to deceive the airlines.
Oh, right.
Because they're not going to say to you, "Oh, no, sorry, sir, you can't bring that travel pillow with you."
Right, yeah.
Buy a lot of the bulkier stuff when you're overseas. So, like, rather than packing insisting on packing your towels and your face creams and sun creams, and a lot of the time when you go to these places, the stuff is a lot cheaper than
okay,
it might
be. Okay, last one.
Last one. Let me find a really good one.
They've taken pictures of everything.
Oh, of course, yeah. So one of the first things you should do before all of your listeners should do this today is take a photograph of your passport, right? And then if you're travelling away, take a photograph of your European health insurance card or your booking, all your booking documentation. But the key thing is your passport, because if you lose your passport in a foreign country, it's a nightmare. But at least it's a nightmare even if you have a photograph of it. But at least if you have a photograph of
it,
when you ring
stuff,
the consulate when you ring the embassy, you can say, here's my passport. passport number. I've lost it. Can you cancel that passport and issue me with my emergency documentation? As opposed to going, yeah, I lost my passport. My name is Ray Darcy, yes, and I don't know what the number is. It just, it takes a second. And when you do take photographs of all your travel documentation, as I say, your health insurance card, your travel insurance policy, all of that stuff, your booking references, all that stuff, put it into a little folder on your phone so that you're not scrolling through all the images. And as I say, it's going to take you 30 seconds and it might save you a little bit of heartache.
It's brilliantly simple. Brilliantly simple.
Just like myself.
And 40 tips
in there. Yes, 40
So this came into pricewatch.rte.ie. My wife and I normally would shop in Aldi or Lidl, but we sometimes would go to Tesco. Today we made sure we had our club card, as on an earlier occasion we came home and looked at the bill and it seemed strange that the prices were so high. We checked at the customer service desk first and asked them to explain how the system worked, as we felt that we'd been incorrectly charged on previous shopping expeditions. Her explanation was clear. The computer system would recognise the club card and apply the discounts as described on the shelf fronts. When we got home, we got no discount. I rang and was told the club card wasn't current anymore and that they discontinue the club card if it hasn't been used for 6 months, as you were deemed not to be a regular customer. He couldn't say when it had been cancelled. So all along, when presenting our club card, we haven't been getting any benefit at all. I made the point that surely if your card has been cancelled, it should come up at the till as inoperative.
Now, in times past, this might not have mattered so much, but in recent times, as in the last year, the club card that you carry if you're a Tesco shopper really makes a difference, because a lot of the savings that they're advertising for people
are
they're for club card carriers only. And as a result, this person thought they were getting their savings. They weren't. Now, just very, very quickly, I contacted Tesco and they've confirmed that it's not 6 months. It's actually the card is discontinued after 2 years of inactivity.
Okay.
And they've apologised to our listener for being misinformed by Tesco staff, and they're investigating it further and they're going to reach redress with the customer. Yeah. So the bottom line is that it's not within 6 months, it is within
2 years.
2 years. Another top tip, by the way, and this is something that I personally use with the Tesco club card, is because I never remember to bring it with me, take a photograph of the club card. Because if you take a photograph of the barcode, you can scan the barcode on your camera and that's all you need. But the customer, as I say, the Tesco have said that it's miscommunication and human error, which has meant the customer received the wrong information. What they still need to establish is why, when they presented their club card on the occasions that they were going shopping,
that they weren't told it was inoperative.
That either they weren't told it was inoperative or the savings that should have accrued did not accrue.
Yes.
So in any event, whilst there was a miscommunication there, there also appears to be an issue with this individual's card. And Tesco are in the process of investigating it. And once they've made contact with the cardholder and got the details of the cardholder, they're going to process it further.
Isn't it odd the difference that a club card, right, which in a way benefits the customer.
Yeah.
That is cancelled after 2 years. But if you were paying into something, and you don't use it for a long time, it goes on.
They would keep charging you forever and ever and ever. 100%. Well, that's how life works, isn't it?
That's how life works. Connor, thanks very much.
PriceWatch@rte.ie.
And Connor will be back with us next Monday. Quick commercial break before noon.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gurma, good morning. Thank you very much. Now, Mehl is now part of a great term in Irish for a think tank, Mehl Machnuf, which implies cooperation, pondering and insights. Cora Anwa, Ledunica, Gurmagut, Array. Oh, Gurmagut. Thank you very much for that. Connor, just taking in the second washing in Sunny Derry, says KD. And about Tesco's club card, you can just use the app on your phone. Always there, ready to scan. No need to worry about carrying club card or taking a picture of your club card when you have the app on the phone. Yeah. Now, it's time for our Who Done It quiz. Two quizzes standing by and there is a prize, and it's a luxurious break for two people to Fota Island Resort in Cork. Fotaisland.ie. It's just 8 miles from Cork City. So much to do, so much to do. There's a swimming pool, the spa, the exclusive Cove restaurant, golf course, and then in its environs you have Fota Wildlife Park, Fota House and Gardens. Then stone's throw from Ballymaloe, Middleton, Ballycotton, lovely places to visit, or go into the English Market and everything else that Cork City has to offer. Fotaisland.ie, 2 nights stay for two people and dinner on one evening in the Amber Lounge. Hello, Claire Galgi.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Come on. August Tussa.
Come on. Arrows. Hampshire Rose of Fod.
Great. Araglin, is it?
Araglin.
Araglin. You've a lot of G's going on there, Claire Galgi.
I sure do.
Go on, you say it to me. Go on. I'm Claire Galgi.
Claire Galgi from, well, I'm not from Araglan, but I'm living in Araglan, County Cork.
I've never met a Galgi before.
Oh, we're very few and far between. We're very special people. We're all related.
And is it an Irish name?
It is an Irish name, yeah. I think it's a Waterford origin. Originally, my parents are from Waterford. You'd find a few Galgis around there, but we're all kind of, you connect us all up easily enough.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And Araglan?
Araglan,
whereabouts in Cork is that?
It is right in the corner where between Waterford and Cork and Limerick, Tipperary. Ballyporeen would be very close to us.
Right.
Lismore, Waterford.
Oh,
very
I know
close.
We are. Yes.
Kilworth, Mitchelstown from Iowa.
Kappa Summer. Is Kappa Summer? Kappa? No. No.
No, that's not ringing the bell. No. But I'm a blow in now, so I wouldn't be much of an expert.
So, Yall, are you near Yall?
I'm working in Yall.
Okay.
No, I'm not near Yall at all.
Right. How long is it from where you live to Yall?
Too long. 40 minutes. Right. 45 minutes.
Yeah, each way. Yeah. Right, all right. That's
go each way, yeah.
That's
but it's a lovely drive. I'm from Dublin, obviously, but it's a lovely, nice, quiet, peaceful country road. So
yeah.
I can't complain too much.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Billy's at home with you.
Billy is, do you know what? I'm after skipping the childminder because he wouldn't leave me on the phone for 2 minutes, not a hope. So,
okay.
Billy's still with the childminder and I've snuck up to the house to do this for us.
And Billy is too. And Johnny is your partner. And
Johnny, he'll pick him up now instead.
Right, okay. And who's responsible for the dinner this evening?
Oh, that's me. It's always me.
Oh,
because
is it
Johnny can't guide an egg. Yeah.
Is that the truth, though? I wonder, is that, you know...
Oh, it is.
Right,
it is.
Okay.
I tested it.
Did you? Right, okay.
Yeah, much to my regret.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So what's on the menu?
We're going to have a nice chicken casserole now tonight because it's disgusting here. It's wet and cold and miserable and nasty. So we'll have a nice, homely, mammy kind of a dinner now.
Lovely, yes. Like a big hug. A chicken casserole.
Oh, it's lovely.
Yes. You're up against Michael Bowe in Donegal. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm not too bad at all, Ray.
Great. Whereabouts in Donegal do you live? Because I know you're on the road at the moment.
Milford.
Right. And you're on the road to where?
We're on the road to Dublin.
Which is bringing you to where?
Florida.
Nice.
Oh, he doesn't need to be going to second folder. Get out of it, Mike, and there's no chance.
We deserve a break after the winter we've had.
I'll go on. You're always giving out up there in Donegal. You're never happy if you're going off to Florida. You're making sick.
Listen, Claire, when I tell you that they're going to Melbourne, Florida, we've just looked at the temperature at the moment. It's 28 degrees, Michael.
Yeah, so big.
Yeah.
Roger. I hope you're a redhead, are you?
I've no hair at all.
Are you heading over there for St. Patrick's Day?
We are indeed, yeah. It's supposed to be a very good parade there on Paddy's Day.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the action there.
Are you taking part in the parade or just looking at it?
No.
Yeah. Who's
just
going with
just
you?
Just watching. My darling wife, Elizabeth.
Right. And are you regulars over to Florida or is this a first?
No, this is our first time.
Right. And why Florida?
We're friends over there, so we're going to visit.
Okay, great. Okay. Claire, you're not happy at all with this. It's going to...
And do you know, it's an awful trip from Donegal to Kvota as well. That would be an awful hardship on your mic and too.
We've been before. It's not that hard.
We'll make it work.
Although this is real competition here. I don't know if I can handle it. Okay, three questions each.
Best of luck, Michael.
Best of luck to you, Claire.
Right. Three questions each. I'll tell you the category, then you tell me if you want a clue or not. If you go for a clue, you get a point. And if you don't go without a clue, you get 2 points for a correct answer. Whoever has the most at the end is the winner. And if it's drawn points, we go to a tie break question. Good luck to you both, Claire and Michael. Here we go. There it is. So, Claire. Music is our first category. Do you want a clue or not?
I'll take one too, clue.
You'll take a clue?
I will, I'll have to give it a go to start, yeah.
Okay, this is your clue then, listen carefully. These guys will be great to go surfing with. For 1 point, who is this? I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's by my side.
What a waste of a clue. The Beach Boys.
Beach Boys, yes. Yeah, they get 1 point. Okay. Do you think you should have gone without a clue now?
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
yeah. Okay.
But well, I'm very nervous, believe it or not.
Okay.
I'm very nervous.
Early days. Michael, music. Yeah. Do you want a clue or not?
Yes. I'll try without a clue.
Without a clue. Okay. For 2 points then, who is this? Well,
I could sing the song, but I don't know who sings it.
No.
Not a clue.
Not a clue. That's the Bee Gees. Jive Talking from Saturday Night Fever.
Yes, of course it is. Of course it is.
Yeah, okay. Right, that's interesting. So, Claire, your strategy probably worked well for you. You're on one. Michael, yet to score. Second category is sport.
Okay. Well, then I can go for two again, because if he doesn't, I'll have two.
So do you want to go for a clue again?
Yeah, I'll go for a clue again.
Okay, right. This guy knows how to party. Who is this for 1 point?
All-Ireland Hurling Final Day should it be, in my humble opinion, a national holiday. I've said it before, but I want to say it again. If you had to leave home because of unemployment or you just wanted to see the world, don't feel left out, because you are with us today in spirit and in mind. We are thinking of you. We are Irish and we are family.
Okay, who's that?
That's Marty Morrissey.
It is Marty Morrissey. You get another point. Okay, two. Michael, yet to score. It's sport for you as well. If you go without a clue and get it right, you're even with Claire going into the final questions. What do you want to do?
I'll have to go without a clue.
All right, without a clue. It's sport for 2 points. Who is this?
I think we had an opposition manager who bemoaned everything that went on because we played really well and deserved to win. And sort of accused me of setting up a team to target certain players, which I don't. Target them all, actually. Let's clear that up.
Who's that?
A man from Barnsley, Mick McCarthy.
It is, yes, Barnsley man, Mick McCarthy gets you 2 points. Okay, it's even. Even going into the final question. Claire, the category film characters. Film characters. So here's the situation. If you go for a clue and get it right, you're on three. Then Michael can go without a clue, get it right, and get two, and he's today's winner. If you go,
yeah, no, I have no clue this time. Right?
No clue. Okay, so it's the name of the character as opposed to the actor. For 2 points, which film character is this?
Item one, a cheery disposition. I am never cross. Item two, rosy cheeks. Obviously. Item three, play games all sorts. Well, I'm sure the children will find my games extremely diverting. Item four, you must be kind. I am kind, but extremely firm.
Well,
that's the Bowel Mary Poppins.
It is the Bowel Mary Poppins, played by Julie Andrews, yes. So, two there. You can't do any more. You're on four. Michael, under a bit of pressure, you have to go without a clue as well, don't you?
Let's go for it, yes.
Okay, so again, film characters, and we're looking for the character's name as opposed to the actor for 2 points to bring us to a tiebreak question. Which film character is this?
Hello, I'm calling in regards to the ad I read in the paper. For the past 15 years, I have worked for the Smythe family of Elbourne, England. That's Smythe, not Smith, dear. But I do have one rule. They'll only eat good, nutritious food with me. That's my rule. I hope it's not too harsh for you, dear.
Well,
Mrs. Doubtfire.
It is, yes. The brilliant Robin Williams and Mrs. Doubtfire. So you get two as well. It's a draw. Brings us to a tiebreak question. We asked you this question.
Oh, horrendous.
Oh, sorry. Are you bowing out already, Claire? Right. Okay.
I haven't a clue. Give it a
chance.
We asked this question before you went on air. I'm going to repeat it for our listening audience now. And whoever answers closest to the correct answer is today's winner. So here it is. According to Google Maps, how long would it take you to cycle from the Rory Gallagher statue in Ballyshannon in County Donegal to the Philina statue on Harry Street in County Dublin? Good question. Your answer, Claire, in hours and minutes.
I think 23 hours and 13 minutes.
That's what you
like
said,
that.
Yes. It's 201 kilometres. Your guess, Michael?
She must have a few punctures there. I guess it was 12 hours, 22 minutes.
12 hours, 22 minutes. The correct answer is 10 hours and 34 minutes. So, Michael.
Well done, Michael. Good for you.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you.
Claire, sorry about
enjoy
that.
Florida.
Yeah, she
I'll try indeed, yes.
Try again, Claire. We're going to send you out to Ray Dar Show. Keep cup and enjoy the chicken casserole as well.
Ah, that's great.
Mind yourself. See you now, Claire. Bye. Michael, well done. You're off to Fode Island Resort and you can see what's in store for you, fodeisland.ie. So enjoy that and enjoy your holiday in Melbourne, Florida.
Well, indeed.
See you, Michael.
Thank you, Ray.
Drive safely.
Bye. On RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we have a mastermind champion sitting in front of us now, Neil Delamere.
How are you?
Good. So you're crowned celebrity mastermind champion.
Yeah, like we were talking off air, this happened like June or July last year.
Right.
It happened a long time ago. Very excited to do it. The chair, and you go and sit in the chair and the music. It's all a bit terrifying. But I did it and got 21 points and walked away with a shiny trophy.
I was watching your performance.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the last time you were in, you did allude to the fact that you had recorded Mastermind.
Yes.
And you couldn't say much about it.
Yes.
Is there an NDA there, or is there...
Yeah, a Neil Delamere allowance. That's what they like to call us.
Very good.
No, you're not allowed to say... Like, I've done the chase as well, and you're not allowed to say who you're against in the chase or how it goes. And a Mastermind, you're allowed to say your specialist subject, but you're not allowed to say how well or badly you did or anything like that. Because they want... You know, they want live television to be live television,
if you know
what I mean.
Yes.
So you're not allowed to really allude to how well you've done. But I used to say it at gigs, like, I'm on Mastermind. And obviously, I can't tell you how I did.
And
but I wouldn't mention if I didn't. A friend of mine always says, who's a BBC presenter, says that people only ever tweet about quizzes when they've gone and won them.
Yes, or done very well.
So
your chosen category, specialist category, the Vikings.
The Vikings, yeah.
Now, you told me that last time. I said it's a bit of a cheat. You have a bit of an advantage because you did a series of programmes on
the Vikings. A documentary on them, yeah.
Did they know that?
They said, what do you want to do? And I said, I'd like to do Red Hugh O'Donnell, please.
Right.
And they went, who? And I went, yes. I reckon there was very few sources on Red Hugh O'Donnell because you want something small, you know.
Yeah.
And they went, And then in my desperation to be on Mastermind, so I didn't play it cool. I went, the Vikings. They went, yes. And then I hung up the phone and went, oh, God. Like, that's 400 years. Like, I was on with the winner of The Apprentice and she did The Wolf of Wall Street. Not even the book, the film.
Right.
So a couple of hours.
It is a long film, though.
It's a long film. Whose side are you on, Ray Darcy?
But you can watch it over and over again in one day.
Yeah, exactly.
I
was thinking, God, this could be from... Because the Vikings got to Newfoundland and Baghdad and everywhere. So it could be from any different source material. And so they said, yeah. And then you kind of forget about it. I was on a list at the start and you just think, it's not going to happen, you know, because there's various different considerations to when people of different ages and different ethnicities and different backgrounds, different genders. And then about only a week before, they went, you're doing it. I was like, I wish you told me that a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm going to have to get...
Going to swat up.
Yeah.
I think you'd be good with cramming, though.
I got an audiobook and just walked around with the dog.
Yes.
And was listening to stuff and trying to... Yeah, I'd be pretty good at cramming.
How many did you get in the specialist?
9 out of 10.
Wow.
I was full raging, because I was a point behind. Because the winner of The Apprentice had gotten 11 questions.
Right.
And I was like, if I lose this by a point... Because I've been asked fewer questions. My questions are longer.
Yes, they were very long.
They were quite long.
And this is the thing, nerdy thing to ask.
Yeah.
But do they...
You're asking the right man, Ray. How many syllables are the questions?
Do they time the questions and make sure that it's even?
I don't know on that. I do know they do it on the chase. They do, and he was saying, listen, you're going to need X amount of pushbacks, or when he says it on that, like he knows it's about 4 seconds or 5 seconds per question on that.
Right.
So I'd imagine they probably do, you know.
That's a big consideration, though.
It is a big consideration, but when you're up against particularly a time thing on something like on the chase, they would be very, very cognizant of that sort of stuff. Yeah.
I could see your heart jumping out of your chest when you sat down first.
Yeah. Somebody texted me the other night and said, oh, you looked really calm. And I was like, no, that's not me calm is me. I watched it back. I haven't obviously did it in July and didn't think about it again. And I noticed that my answers, the volume is quite low. You know, I haven't even expelled much breath. I'm like, 2000. You know what I mean? So that was, yeah. You're just trying to concentrate.
So general knowledge then was where you really came into your own.
Yeah, I was a point behind when I did.
And is that from doing the Blame Game and just...
And it's just I'm interested in things. Yeah. Yes, curious about yes, things. Yeah, and yeah. I like history and I like geography and I like sport. And yeah, also I kind of don't panic in those things. I like quizzes and my brother is a really, really good quiz. Like they won the All-Ireland a couple of years ago in the quiz. And the key to that is you get one or two right and then you kind of settle into yourself. Like I was looking at some of the other guys and one of the questions was something like Maui something and Maui something or in which state. And you're sitting there and you go, I don't know, but I know that sounds Hawaiian. So you guess that right. So as long as you don't panic and you can see people get into a spiral, they get one or two wrong and then
that's
they're,
it,
gone.
They're gone. They're gone.
And that can happen to anybody. You
yes, because the brain just goes blank.
Yeah, and they concentrate on, and if you're up against somebody like the Chase or something like that, that's their big advantage. That's their milieu. They're sitting there and if they get one wrong, it's gone out of their head. They press the dump button. They don't think about the next one.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas you're still going, oh, I can't believe I didn't know that. And then you're gone.
Yes.
You know?
We'll talk about the Chase in a moment, but first, this. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. It's odd because the message in that song is, you know, when the going gets tough, the good going, there's Neil Dillimer sitting down for the general knowledge round.
Yeah.
He's two behind the man from The Apprentice.
Yeah.
And the one he doesn't get is...
I didn't get that right. And I don't know a whole lot about music, I'll be honest. But I taught Billy Ocean and they said, and the second last sentence, word of the sentence is British singer, and I thought he was American.
Oh, yeah.
And had they just said singer, I would have gotten it.
The other song that they mentioned, yeah. This is, do you even recognise it? No.
I didn't put it on. Put the headphones on.
That was the other song they mentioned.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, wasn't he Get Out of My Dreams, Get Into My Car?
Yes.
Yeah, so I actually knew it, but he was mucking you.
And he was Caribbean Queen. Yeah. I think they did European Queen, American Queen, Caribbean Queen.
Like a river dance. There's about five of them all around the world.
Out of it, like,
that's a genius idea. That's basically Marvel films before Marvel films, isn't it? But I was glad we did it with Clive Myrie as well. So he's the BBC presenter, you know, the newsreader.
Yes.
And he's just really nice and really, really pleasant. And whereas
does he ever fluff?
No. You mean a question? Or,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. A question. No, he doesn't really fluff questions. I think John Humphreys used to do it, and John Humphreys was pretty acerbic in some ways, and people are very nervous. Yeah. And it was lovely to do with Jane Middlemas. When I was watching Top of the Pops in the 90s, Jane Middlemas was on Top of the Pops, and she was absolutely lovely on the show as well. And she did Duran Duran, and she only got 4 or 5, and has admitted, she was on the radio yesterday saying, yeah, I was in the fan club when I was 13. I didn't do any research after that, thought that would be enough. I was really good in general knowledge, and but she was just really nice, and it was a really lovely day. I know people always say that on, I hope you've had a nice day, but we did. She's from the same town. She says she's from Ashington, and I was like, oh, Irish people know that because Jack Charlton and Bobby Charlton were from there, so we just kind of hit it off, right. And there wasn't that kind of level of
but the Chase now, let's get, because we're running out of time now.
Okay, sorry.
See, and it is that you'll appreciate that because quizzes are all about time.
Yeah.
So you've recorded the Chase as well.
I have recorded the Chase. Yeah.
Celebrity, when will we see that?
I don't know when that's going to be out, but we did that in November, and it was myself and Jamie Borthwick from EastEnders, and Jasmine from Place in the Sun, and Helen Lederer, who would have been in Blackadder and Ab Fab and all those things, and then me. And you know the UK audience are going to go, I know three of those people, and who's the ringer guy at the end? He looks like he's happy to be there. I'm just kind of waving like
Wait, you brought it up now. So.
I brought one up, right? Why am I on a celebrity show in the UK? I don't know. The agent rings me, he goes, you want to be on the quiz? And I go, yes. But I
Where did it start?
When did what start?
Where did this start? You know, were you on Richard Osman's...
Yeah, I did Fighting Talk. I do Fighting Talk a lot, right. On BBC, yes. On 5 Live. And then I met Richard Osman, and he said, I like you do House of Games, you look like a quizzer. So I did that. And then you move on from there.
You have
a nice little show reel and you can put it together. And I mean, I've done bits and pieces in the UK, but I suppose the profile wouldn't be like it is here. But all you can do on those, if you're on a celeb quiz... all you can do is do well. So at least if you do well, they go, well, I know one reason he's there, but I don't know who Lally is, but I know why he's on the quiz.
And he wasn't funny.
He wasn't funny at all. I mean, you don't watch Mastermind for the laughs.
I know. And it'd be very odd if you cracked a joke in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
A terrible waste of time.
Yeah. You also have done really badly if you're just, you get three wrong and go, I got to play this for laughs now. The trophy is so far out of my reach now, I'm going to play this for laughs. Do the two Ronnie sketch.
So you've done a countdown, Fight and Talk, House of Games, The Chase, Not Yet Broke, Mastermind. Are you heading for some sort of Guinness Book of World Records?
Oh God, I'd love to do Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That's the one I'd like to do.
Yeah.
And I might fingers crossed, do Beat the Chasers. So Beat the Chasers, you can...
Is there a celebrity Beat the Chasers, yeah?
There is celebrity Beat the Chasers, yeah. Right. Made by the same people who make the chase. whose number is in my phone, whose hedge I live in and sit outside their house going, is it time yet? I'd like to do that. Yeah, they're just fun. Yeah. I used to do these things...
Do you get paid for them?
Nominally, but you, the money is for the charity. You can, and something like the chase, you know, you can raise a significant amount if you do okay. Yeah. I used to kind of do these things, like when I started doing comedy, going, if I do that, then I might get that, I might get that. Yeah. And then COVID happens, then you go, you know something, I'll just do that, because that in itself is worthy enough to do, you know.
Well, you're in that sort of, you're over there. What do you think of the whole Gary Lineker thing? It seems to have been sorted out. I was saying that probably it has, but it hasn't. We're going to hear more about it.
I think the BBC were surprised by the, I mean, it's testament to the man's popularity among his colleagues. I think they're surprised that they all rode in behind them, and I think that's surprised them, and then I think they packed themselves into a corner and now they've put him back on, and I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah, it's a different world, because he has two lives, doesn't he? He's two public lives. He has the public life of a BBC presenter, and he's the public life of a man with 8.8 million followers.
Yeah, and he's a contractor, and like, they don't have a leg to stand on, because Alan Sugar has said way worse things.
Yes.
And if you, once you establish the precedent of someone commenting who's on the BBC, who's not employed by the BBC, and you don't take him to task, well, then you can't say anything about Gary
Lineker. And they obviously okayed his comments on Qatar.
Exactly.
That went through a number of committees before it was...
About the rights of another country. And also, when you have a Holocaust survivor taking Suella Braverman to task, or Braverman to task, for her use of language, which is what Gary Lineker said, you have very few legs to stand on, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think there'll be more about this. Anyway, so the chase, you'll come in when you're on the chase.
I will. I just put like a regular, like a dental appointment, just put every 6 months I come in and chat about the latest quiz I've been on. And I am on tour at the moment, by the way. Can I get that
little
plug in?
Yeah.
I'm doing the Mermaid Theatre on Paddy's Day, and I'm doing the Everyman in Cork on the 8th of April, and I'm doing Vicar Street in September.
That's St. Patrick's Day. Anyway, I'll explain to that. Cormac and Sarah on the way on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.